LA. Hi, guys. I'm Nomi Konst, Michael Tracy, Jimmy Dore. This is so exciting. They allowed me to come into the studio and actually speak directly to the TYT Army in real time. I'm so honored to be here. I'm very nervous. I have to say this. I'm partly nervous because I've never done this before, and I'm probably going to screw it up a lot. But I'm also nervous because I got hacked today. I was one of those many people who was dumb enough to click on that phishing.
The Google
phishing thing, and it happened right before I came on. And I'm like, oh my God, are they reading my emails? They're all fake. I'm using a Hillary Clinton excuse. If someone hacks my emails now and starts pulling stuff up from like 1997, because I was on Gmail then, I'm just going to say it was all fake.
Oh, God. Thank God I don't use a Gmail thing, so I'm immune to this. But someone who's using Gmail and gets hacked and then has my emails on their thing, those are available, right?
Oh, yeah, the opposite.
Yeah.
That's how we learned about so many things that were happening.
Because of John Podesta's emails.
Because of John Podesta, yeah.
I was going to say, I know there are some support groups available for you to join if you're really feeling down about this. And to find out more information, just email John Podesta.
And it's in a Google group.
Right.
Yeah. I honestly have never felt so much compassion for John Podesta in my life before. I will say he did look good. And out of all the people, I was really surprised by how professional he looked in the WikiLeaks emails. I expect him to be more of an asshole.
Well, I did. The one part that bothered me about him personally was when he was bragging or he was celebrating that I made it to Medicare. Now I'm going to tell my candidate it'll never happen for everyone else.
Right.
It's just that was just like, really? So you know how great this is and you're right. Still not going to push for it because of what? Corruption?
Right.
And also to be charitable to you, the phishing email that Podesta clicked on was like just so overtly bogus that nobody with even a smidgen of technical expertise would have fallen for it. But the one that was going around today was actually pretty sophisticated. Like it was, it put out all the Google links as if it was official and authoritative. So, you know, the thought crossed my mind to maybe click on it when I got them. But then some other instinct kicked in and I managed to avoid it.
I had it and I was like, no, let me check the email address. Let me check the address. And it was a Google address.
Yeah.
I don't know how they did it.
Oh, wow.
And I'm not the person to ask. But really great transition because speaking of emails.
Oh.
The story that will never end. FBI Director James Comey testified before Congress today again, about the emails again, about Russia again, about whether or not he threw the election again. But one really interesting part of this, the several hours of testimony that stood out that I don't think the press has been covering enough, is how he sort of threw it in the face of former Congressman Anthony Weiner, who, if we want to play that clip real quick, of him speaking about Anthony Weiner.
Then they worked night after night after night, and they found thousands of new emails. They found classified information on Anthony Weiner. Somehow, her emails are being forwarded to Anthony Weiner, including classified information by her assistant, Huma Abedin. And so they found thousands of new emails.
Thousands of new emails. It's all Anthony Weiner's fault. When Secretary Clinton spoke on stage yesterday with Christiane Amanpour, she never mentioned Anthony Weiner. I wonder why she didn't blame him.
Well, because it's much easier for her to blame Comey, and that's exactly what she did yesterday. One reason why I keep talking about this and I find it so maddening is because there's a mythology around the Comey letter that's sort of crystallizing into history. Mm. And it's being pushed by liberal pundits, Democrats who want to absolve Hillary of culpability. They want to just heap the blame all on Comey. But what Comey really revealed today, and this should really be emphasized, is that, quote, thousands of new emails were found on a device that had not initially been turned over to FBI investigators. Now, the argument that the Hillary team put forward all throughout the 2016 Democratic primary was that this was a nothing burger, right? They were totally compliant with the investigation. There was not going to be any political liability here. But according to Comey, and again, we're taking his word at face value, but there's no reason to doubt at least this detail. New emails hadn't been assessed were withheld from the investigators. And then because of Weiner's hijinks and his relationship with Huma Abedin, it catalyzed the reopening of this investigation. And I think the way people were sort of crafting a mythology around this to solely blame Comey or isolate the Comey letter as a variable is really destructive because it sort of marring their ability to honestly assess what happened in 2016, and it's just gonna continue. We're not gonna stop talking about this anytime soon.
And the reason why they found these emails was it was reported, you know, through this testimony that Huma Abedin would forward classified emails to Anthony Weiner to print.
So I'm pretty sure that. Well, then I'm sure there's going to be a criminal prosecution of Huma and Anthony and Hillary and everybody, right? Because that's illegal.
Well, they said the intent. It was not with the intent of a criminal activity.
Yeah, that doesn't matter. I'm pretty sure that doesn't matter. We've prosecuted lots of people for that kind of stuff.
But they were black. Let's be real.
Yeah. So no, I mean it's just disgusting the two-tiered kind of justice that we have for people. I mean, that you can't forward classified information to someone who, and then to print. So they know that that's not okay. They know printing. Those people are at the tippy top of government, right? And so she's the right-hand person to the Secretary of State, and she doesn't know that sending classified emails to her frickin' husband to print is wrong and illegal. Of course they do. So, but the plutocrats never get prosecuted. Everybody got the law and order is for everybody else.
Not to mention, as a congressman, so aside from the fact that we're dealing with State Department and sending classified information, as a congressman, you know very well these laws because you have to follow them when you're campaigning. You have to go across the street to make phone calls, political phone calls. You know where those firewalls are. I mean, it's not the same firewall, but you know where those firewalls are. You're very conscious of them. And what kills me is they should have been even more so because they were in the middle of an election when everybody's watching every move they make.
Right, exactly. Well, I also just want to point out, and I don't know if you're going to get to this part, but how they just come after WikiLeaks, how Comey just went after. Are you going to get to that part?
No, let's talk about it.
So there's part here in this article, it says, Comey says, to my mind, he's talking about WikiLeaks. It crosses a line when it moves from being trying to educate the public and instead becomes about intelligence porn, quite frankly. A huge portion of WikiLeaks activities has nothing to do with legitimate news activity, he said, but simply about releasing classified information to damage the United States of America. Well, that's fantastic. And I would love the head of the FBI to be the person to decide who's doing legitimate news reporting and who's not. I think we certainly need a guy in the government who's been already proven to be corrupt on every side of every issue, according to everybody who hates him. Because if you're a Hillary Clinton person, you hate him. If you're a Republican, everybody's said this guy was corrupt at some point. But this guy knows that it's a news organization that's really not reporting news. That's really what's happening. You mean the news organization that exposed war crimes inside of our own government that no one got prosecuted for except the people at the very bottom? You mean that kind of news organization? So if Comey had any integrity, we wouldn't be attacking the press exactly like Trump does.
I think their strategy here. So the Clinton strategy is obviously blame a lot on Comey when it's convenient to them. At the same time, Democrats have praised Comey as well. And obviously blame everybody else. And Comey is like, look over there, Russia. And WikiLeaks is tied to Russia. We have Chuck Grassley, who there's a quote where he says, the second quote, we need to know whether there was anything improper going on between the Trump campaign and the Russians. This is Republicans saying this. Or if these allegations are just a partisan smear campaign that manipulated our government into chasing conspiracy theories. So there's this like back and forth political game. Yet Comey keeps saying, it's not politics, I'm just being the FBI director. But he wants to throw up his hands and say, it's not my fault that we have Trump. It's the Russians. And now the Republicans are like, no. This is a conspiracy theory. They're jumping all over the place.
You know, the irony of Comey's WikiLeaks criticism, and this was echoed a few weeks ago by Mike Pompeo, the CIA director, is that in principle, the Democrats who have spent the last 9 months demonizing WikiLeaks and saying it's not a genuine journalism outfit, that it's really just a front for Russian intelligence, they should be regarded as a hostile actor. They should be cheering these condemnations from Comey and from Pompeo because they're perfectly in accord with what Democrats have been putting forward now for a very long time about the supposed disreputability of WikiLeaks. So it just goes to show how myopic and short-sighted those Democratic criticisms of WikiLeaks were just because they happened to damage Hillary Clinton. Clinton's political prospects doesn't mean you should, in a broader sense, demonize WikiLeaks, which is obviously going to come back to bite you once a Republican administration is in power. And that's what's going on right now.
When do you guys think this is going to end? When are we going to stop debating the 2016 election?
As soon as Hillary gets elected again.
It's never going to end. It's
really never.
It really is never going to end. You know, Nate Silver just put out a whole discussion of the impact of the Comey letter today, because there's still more analysis to be done here. Actually, Hillary Clinton just yesterday cited Nate Silver. Did you see that? So his words are seen as gospel, and there are just so many fallacies.
Even though he was wrong pretty much throughout everything in the last election, right?
Pretty consistently in error, let's say, within the margin of error. Yeah. No, but he even did, I know I'm dwelling on maybe a trivial detail, but if you go and read Nate Silver's article today, he even denies that the FBI investigation into Clinton's emails was reopened in October. He disputes that the word reopen is apt here. So, and that's just beyond ridiculous at this point. You know, Dianne Feinstein even acknowledged today that it was reopened. The New York Times, in its definitive look at Comey in the 2016 election a couple weeks ago, used the word reopened. Mm-hmm. So for Nate Silver, who's seen as somebody in a position of influence and who has a lot of leeway over how people analyze politics, if even he is not willing to accept basic details of what transpired last year, I have a hard time believing that anybody, that we're going to be done debating this anytime soon, because so much is still in flux and there's still such a stalwart unwillingness to actually grapple with the reality of what happened, which is that there was a concerted propaganda campaign launched by Clinton's campaign surrogates and Democrats to deny that the email server investigation was of any significance, and to say that even people on the left who raised concerns about it during the primary process, they were in league with this right-wing hate campaign against Hillary, and they had no right to be bringing this up, and it was just a cheap talking point that they were purveying. No, actually, it turned out to be such a something burger, that according to them now, in their estimation, it cost her the election. So if people don't come to grips with the propaganda and the active deceit that was used here to cover up what was a hugely consequential investigation, then I don't see how we really move forward.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't it revealed recently that blaming the election on Russia was kind of cooked up by John Podesta and Robby Mook, while they were sitting there with a couple of Shake Shack shakes in front of them somewhere in Brooklyn? Didn't I just read that in Shattered? Didn't that?
I'm only on page 32 of Shattered right now, so don't give it away.
The day after the election, the day after the election, they sat there and said, you know, our narrative is going to be that Comey and Russia was the reason for our loss. So basically, external factors caused our loss. It had nothing to do with us. It was just these nefarious foreign kind of influences that somehow took victory away from us. And the media just dutifully regurgitated that line, and it became basically conventional wisdom.
Yes.
And now you have David Axelrod, former advisor to Obama, of course. He came out today on CNN, and I wish we had the clip, but I just thought of it. David Axelrod came out and said, you know, this was the worst campaign. You lost against the worst campaign in history. You have to take responsibility. He says, yeah, all those things were bad, but it should have never been that close where those things would affect the election, because you were running against the worst campaign in history. And, you know, he's right, I think.
Yeah, Bernie has said that when he was confronted on CBS Morning News about that. And he would say, but they were trying to say, well, it's the Comey letter. And he said, it should never be that close. You shouldn't be that close to a guy like Donald Trump. The Democratic Party, he said, I'm personally embarrassed that we can't win the votes of working class against a guy like that. You wanted to say, JR?
Yeah, well, I'm wondering is there any more fear that Hillary or any surrogates or anybody nearly surrounding that campaign is going to be in any kind of position to run another campaign on a national level again, which we're going to get to. And that, I think, is where the focus needs to be. Mm. If Hillary says something now, I don't think we need to worry about it, because now it's like we're giving her the same attention we're giving Donald Trump when he says, you know, I won. Yeah. So she says, you know why I didn't win. Now we're going, well, okay, you didn't win. Why are we talking to you? You're in the background now. So people who are now going to glom on to her approach, that's who we need to focus on. And I think that's why we're getting to something else later about the same approach that's going to happen. We can't make the same mistake we made the last time with this whole campaign. So unless we think she's coming back or that Chelsea's running, in 8 more years, or whenever she's qualified to, then, you know, I think we can put her in the back burner now and focus on the next people who are going to be the next Hillary Clinton.
And, you know, you're right. These people have a history of failing up. When you look at the senior consultants, with the exception of a few, they have worked in a lot of races that were very expensive races, not really gotten the best results. And now, after, think of one right now, her pollster, who you read in Shattered, they had a lot of problems with Joel Benenson. Guess what Joel Benenson's doing now? He's working on a campaign in New Jersey for a former Goldman Sachs executive against a Bernie Sanders former lawmaker, or current lawmaker in New Jersey, who's, you know, got all the union support, all the working class support. And Joel Benenson's cash and checks. Who would hire this man after the polling that he did on this race? The worst polling in history.
Well, it turns out you fail upward, exactly like you said. But I want to make one more point before we leave this, because I discovered this, and I haven't seen it really talked about anywhere else. In the WikiLeaks revealed that an internal document was done, some polling was done. The guy's last name was Brodnick, I think. And anyway, in his document that he turned into the Hillary Clinton campaign, it said her biggest vulnerability was, you know what her biggest vulnerability, according to this internal document of polling done for the Hillary Clinton campaign, her biggest vulnerability was the deal she did with plutonium with Russia. Mm. And when people were made aware that the Clinton Foundation got $140 some million because of this deal, and that Bill Clinton got $500,000 from a Kremlin-related bank, so this plutonium deal, giving control of plutonium to frickin' Russia, which Hillary Clinton signed off on when she was the head of the State Department. When that issue was brought up, more than 50% of the voters said they were less likely to vote for her. That was in 2015 that document surfed. That's when that document was originated. So they know that her biggest vulnerability was the Russian smear. And what did they do? They turned it around and threw it at their opponent as soon as they could.
And that a lot of that had to do with the funneling of money, because she was funneling, the money was being funneled through Canada and back down, you know, the approval was through the State Department.
Which, right.
I remember that moment saying to myself, there's no way you can get out of this.
Yeah. Another thing is that it's not so much about Hillary herself,
right,
in terms of why this issue needs to be examined, meaning the Comey letter and the false history that's being constructed. It's that the people who enable the nomination of Hillary are still basically in power in the Democratic Party. And if they don't suffer any reputational consequences or any professional consequences for engaging in this active campaign of deceit to really deceive Democratic primary voters into thinking that Hillary Clinton was the safe choice, notwithstanding this felony criminal investigation that was explicitly targeting Hillary, and which began in July of 2015 and didn't culminate until July of the next year, and then, as we all know, blew up in everyone's faces in October. Mm-hmm. If the people who were behind the propagation of that false narrative don't face any kind of consequences and are still dictating how the party operates, then what confidence should we have that something equally disastrous is not going to happen in the future? So Hillary is, as an individual, yeah, I mean, people get maybe a little worked up about what she may or may not say, although yesterday she gave really just a mind-boggling interview where basically, you know, she said, I supported Trump's serious strikes, but I only wish he hadn't been so kind to the Russians by letting them know that strikes were imminent and that, you know, to get their personnel out of the way, you know, because World War III, I mean.
Do you think she reads Twitter? No, I'm serious, because when I heard that statement, I was wondering, have you been in the woods not speaking to anybody? Because newsflash, you can change your mind about the Syria airstrikes. And no, she doubled down on it. She's like, yeah, it was a great idea.
I think she has students just out of college writing memos to her about tweets rather than actually looking at the tweets. That's the only really way to rationalize that conduct. But yeah, I mean, it's not so much about her as a person. It's about the mindset that she represents. And that mindset is very widely held.
I think you're right. And, you know, when you look at the way that to tie it back into today and relevancy and why, you know, as we go on to talk about Obamacare, why this is important, you know, you have people in office right now who are supported, if not of the same mindset, of this generation, this cadre of Democrats that really won't take responsibility for their actions. You know, we lost the worst election of our time, around 1,000 seats. The DNC is now staffed up with a bunch of former Hillary advisors. And by the way, you'd think the DNC and part of their unity would say, you know what? Bernie Sanders ran a really good campaign off of very little money. and ran against his uphill battle was, maybe we should hire a couple people from Bernie's campaign to come in and advise us. Nope.
No way.
Not one person from the Bernie campaign literally works in the DNC right now. Literally, like, is getting paid. There are people on the transition team, but that's not a real thing.
So now people keep asking me about the Unity Tour, and I was told that Bernie was going to do a Medicare for All tour, and that somehow he got it forced upon him to make it a Unity Tour and take Tom Perez with him. He really wanted to take Keith Ellison, and he wanted to go around and raise awareness about the effectiveness of Medicare for All, and that's what we really need. But the DNC hijacked. Why would he let, do you have any insight into, or why, you, let me speculate maybe, why he would let that happen? Why wouldn't he just go ahead and do a Medicare for All instead of this bullshit Unity Tour where Tom Perez is so afraid of getting booed, he has to introduce Bernie Sanders before he even starts his own freaking speech? I've never seen that happen. 30 years of nightclub performance, I've never seen a guy open his own set by introducing the guy after him who's more popular. That's never fucking happened. Tom Perez is so afraid of getting booed, that's what he's doing, because people are booing him. You know why? Because Tom Perez is destructive to our country and the Democratic Party, and it's obvious to the dumbest motherfucker out there.
I'm going to open the next segment by saying Bernie Sanders, Bernie Sanders, Bernie Sanders, Bernie Sanders. My thought is, and I'm, my feelings are probably not as strong about Tom Perez, having met him. He is what he is.
He's very affable, I'm sure.
He is what he is. He's not Bernie Sanders, but nobody else is. My thought is, he knew Bernie Sanders would go out there. They would see it firsthand what the people are like around him. Because, you know, we've all been at Bernie Sanders rallies. It is a different feeling.
Yes.
I've been at Hillary Clinton rallies. I've been to DNC rallies. Yes. Never got that feeling there.
Yes.
So that's number one. I think being on Chris Hayes when they did that joint interview, the counter
brutal.
Was unbelievable. I mean, Bernie's he's a smart guy. I'm not saying that he could foresee that, but I think he thought, I get to go around and show them what the real country's like. Why not?
Okay.
Maybe.
And I think Bernie is also pretty conciliatory toward the Democratic establishment. And that's sort of ironic because a lot of his opponents within the party will say, oh, he's not a real Democrat.
Right.
Forces these divides in the party. But
right.
in reality, if you look at his conduct, he usually is willing to be something of a team player.
Right.
I mean, he endorsed Hillary. He went around the country campaigning for her. He's doing this Unity Tour with Tom Perez. So I think it's just sort of in his nature. And I don't know why people are really that surprised by that at this point.
I mean, we'll see. Speaking of Democrats getting their act together, before we go to a break, Obamacare. There's, you know, the latest effort to repeal Obamacare again. The Republicans are trying to adjust their actions from a couple of weeks ago. There is a new amendment for this new Obamacare repeal where they're trying to please all sides of the aisle, the moderates, the Freedom Caucus. But some of these moderate Republicans are not on board because it goes too far. And so they're adding all these amendments for things like pre-existing conditions, because turns out, you know, people want to have insurance if they have pre-existing conditions. Even Republicans in office want to have them. So we have, you know, there's Fred Upton and Billy Long, their representatives, who have been on the road talking about their amendment. Let's play that.
I talked to the president yesterday afternoon. I told him I could not support the bill as it was then moving through the Rules Committee without added protections for those with pre-existing illnesses. And based on our discussions and the agreement on this amendment, can now be in a place where I can support the bill with such amendment.
When they made what I consider the change to pre-existing conditions, that's when I said, I'm a no. The president said, Billy, really need you. We need you, man. I said, you don't have me. He said, really need you. We went through that for 20 minutes. He called back yesterday. We need you, we need you, we need you. I said, I'm a no. And I stayed a no, and I said, Fred Upton and I have been working on some language that if we could get in there, it would get us both in the position where we need to be on pre-existing conditions to make sure those people are covered, because they need to be covered, period. And so today we're here announcing that with this addition that we brought to the president and sold him on and over an hour meeting in here with him, that we're both yeses on the bill.
The interesting thing about this is the new amendment from Upton, this is coming from thehill.com, would provide $8 billion over 5 years to help people with pre-existing conditions afford their premiums in states that are granted a waiver from Obamacare protections. But Center for American Progress, more progressive leading organization, I won't say liberal, they estimated that these high-risk pools are underfunded by much more, that is $200 billion over 10 years, and that is after the GOP already included $130 billion over 10 years. So this is going to be, they add another $8 billion, they're short of $192 billion.
So with the $130 billion for people with pre-existing conditions, that fell 200 short?
200 billion
short. So now they added 8 billion? And these guys think that's what they're, so what they're trying to do is snow the people in their districts to make them think that they actually are, they're taken care of. But their people in their districts will find out quickly that they're not taken care of. And then when they go to vote again, they're going to vote those guys out because that's why those guys were hanging on, because they know their constituents are up on this bill and they know their constituents want to have pre-existing conditions protected, right? So this is all just smoke and mirrors. Yep. Temporarily. And then as soon as this kicks in, which I'm going to guess they won't have this new Trump care kick in until right after the midterm elections. Hmm. And so I'm guessing that's what, so again, it's going to be fall on the media and it's going to fall on Democrats to get the message out. And so that's why they probably won't.
Let's show the clip number 4 of Obamacare. So the Hill also says that the underlying bill also has several provisions some moderates object to, such as a deep Medicaid cuts. The Congressional Budget Office estimated the overall legislation would result in 24 million more people being uninsured over a decade.
You know, one thing that's interesting to me here is that it's become an article of faith among some Republicans like Upton and Long, mm-hmm. that the government should be taking an activist role in the marketplace to bar insurers from precluding people with pre-existing conditions to gain insurance. So in a sense, they're sort of making a concession to Democrats who say that, yes, we do need active government intervention in the insurance marketplace. That's not really how it's being framed. The people who want a free market solution to healthcare, how do you reconcile that with we want the government to really bar insurers from doing what the market dictates by not allowing them to penalize people with pre-existing conditions?
And one of those pre-existing conditions is rape, just so you know.
Yes. I think it's funny, or just kind of interesting, that now what they're trying to do, what the Republicans are trying to do with their new health care bill, Trump Care, is they're now going around trying to convince their own constituents that it is as good as Obamacare. Do you realize that's what's happening right now? So they're trying to say, in fact, right here, this is from direct from Trump's mouth. He said that it will be every bit as good on pre-existing conditions as Obamacare. So now you're saying that we're going to get rid of the shitty bill and the thing will replace it, but it's going to be just as good. I thought it was horrible. Well, I mean, it'll be just as horribly good. Well, what do you mean exactly? Why are you repealing it if you're going to So again, they put themselves in a corner. And it's their own fault. I guarantee you the Democrats will not make the Republicans pay the price they're supposed to pay for this.
What would be the worst thing that the Democrats could do?
Go along with it?
I mean, other than that, to pay the price. What could they possibly do at this point to shame the Republicans into
Should start proposing single payer all the time and talk about it all the time and expand Medicare, and that should be their position right now, instead of trying to say that Obamacare was great, because everyone knows that Obamacare wasn't. There was no cost controls in Obamacare, and people still can't afford their health care, and there was still some like 30 million people mm-hmm. uninsured under Obamacare, so they got to get rid of that shit of trying to defend, which is a right-wing health care plan anyway, right, that was instituted, don't forget, when the Democrats had complete control of government, the Congress, filibuster fruit, Senate, and the presidency. And what did they give us? They gave us a right-wing healthcare plan anyway. And when they're being confronted right now, people like Debbie Wasserman Schultz and Dianne Feinstein and Nancy Pelosi, and they're asked, do you support single payer? Their response is, it doesn't matter if I do because the Republicans are there. No, the people who stopped it were the Democrats, which is why we got to get rid of people like them.
Incrementalism.
One question that Democrats could pose to Republicans, which I think would be interesting, is why during Obama's presidency did you vote over and over again to just do a clean repeal of Obamacare if in reality so many of your members of your caucus were concerned about pre-existing conditions? So, I mean, what was the point of all those votes? Was it purely symbolic? Because apparently Many of your most influential members are not willing to vote for a bill that also does away with the pre-existing conditions protection. So that would just show sort of the internal inconsistency of the Republican position here.
Oh, the Republicans are not inconsistent at all. They don't have a history of doing that. All right, we'll be back after the break to discuss more inconsistencies in government. Shocker. I can't believe they're trusting me to do this. Bernie. I am now moving all the Bernie stories up because we know you love Bernie stories.
Yes, we do love Bernie stories. But before we start the Bernie story, can I just tell people that June 10th, I'll be in Chicago, Illinois, doing a live Jimmy Dore show. Go to jimmydorecomedy.com for those tickets. That's during that People's Summit.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know what else is that weekend? People's Summit.
Yeah, I won't be going to that, but I will be doing a live Jimmy Dore show. And it's almost sold out, so get your tickets. Right now, jimmydorecomedy.com.
You could do both. You can come see me at the People's
yes,
Summit.
Yes, go see her. She's fantastic.
And Jimmy Dore, I will go with you to the Jimmy Dore show if you, I don't know what
get
can we auction off. Like, what can we auction off? If you watch all of my videos and pass my quiz.
On June 10th, I'll be sitting in a room quietly staring at a wall.
Oh, that's nice. You're going to be
Michael.
A little meditating, getting in touch with the source.
Yeah.
Do you know Michael's not on Instagram?
You know, I never really felt the compulsion. I mean,
you will.
I don't know. Twitter is just like enough of a factor in my life that I'm kind of content with just having that as a regular social media output.
You kind of own Twitter in a good way and a bad way.
Yeah, yes, in a good way.
When I'm on with you, sometimes I'm like, who are these people? I've never, I don't even know what audience this is. So this actually happened on Twitter. You guys might know who Katie Halper is. She is a writer. She's a very talented writer, and she was a big supporter of Bernie Sanders in the campaign, as many writers were. She's a feminist, a dear friend of mine. She was on Twitter yesterday, and I saw a little exchange between her and a woman named Carmen Rios, who is an editor at Ms. Magazine. You know, the famous Ms. Magazine that Gloria Steinem founded. I have subscribed to Ms. Magazine, I think, since I was 15 years old. So this really struck me. If you recall, Gloria Steinem endorsed Hillary Clinton. And she had made some controversial comments last year around January about women who were supporting Bernie Sanders. Let's play that clip real quick.
Kind of not fair to measure most women by the standard of most men, because they're going to get more activist as they grow older. And when you're young, you're thinking, you know, where are the boys? The boys are with Bernie, or, you know.
Ooh.
Yeah.
It's a little condescending to women, I think.
It's a little condescending. I think we dealt with it well, because it was around the time when Madeleine Albright said, there's a special place in hell for women who don't support other women. Does that include Michelle Bachmann? And yeah, pretty much.
Jill Stein, does that include Jill Stein?
Jill Stein. I didn't support her, but don't shame me. So 30 years before that, or 40 years before that, Gloria Steinem was saying this about Bernie Sanders.
Actually, I'm only here today to make Bernie Sanders an honorary woman.
Okay, that was not 40 years. That was 1996 time. So why is this relevant? Well, one of the editors of Ms. Magazine today, Carmen Rios, tweeted out some controversial comments. Let's post those. And this was yesterday, she continued. Rejoice, for one day Bernie Sanders will retire or die. So that was on the 7th. But then on the 20th, she says, gonna build a monument for all the women who are right and erect it on top of Bernie Sanders' grave.
What the F? What is that about?
I don't know. There are some people who are still so devoted to this Bernie bro meme. Even if they're not using that phrase anymore, they still want to kind of portray Bernie Sanders as having unique appeal among these kind of oblivious males who get undue attention in society. And that's just basically the angle that they're pushing in terms of how to analyze the Bernie movement. And it just, I don't know, it's just getting tiresome at this point.
Well, it's worse than tiresome, right? Because this kind of behavior is actually destructive. It's coming. If this was just a person, you could ignore it. But she actually is from Ms. Magazine.
Right.
And she actually runs the Ms. Magazine Twitter account, and which is why tweeting at Ms. Magazine about this doesn't do any good. Which is what I found out from you, right?
No, I learned that. I found that out accidentally. I found it out from Twitter.
So this is way worse because in the article, she makes the point, imagine it being the other way. It's just like, I just don't understand the Democrats or the people who can think they're on the left who are still fighting the primary. Your candidate won the primary. Your candidate beat Bernie Sanders. So that's over. She lost to Donald Trump. But you're not angry at Donald Trump. You're still angry about the primary. That is the craziest thing. And by the way, it's May, and she was tweeting that in April. That's 6 months after the election. Could you imagine in 1989, people still pissed off about Michael Dukakis' primary? What the fuck? That is just your guy, just unhinged, crazy bullshit. But it's okay when it's done. So that's why people, when you call people sexist, and it doesn't mean anything anymore when you call Trump a sexist, because you call somebody like Bernie a sexist, and you call them Bernie bros, and it's all made up, and it's all bullshit because you're empty inside, and it's all identity politics, and it's nothing real, and people see through you. By the way, you and your brilliant side lost to Donnie Tanahan's Trump.
This is speculation. I'm sorry, Michael.
No, go ahead.
Speculation on that is that she was exposed in the primaries by someone who was smart enough to go behind, which I don't think Trump would have had the intelligence, to go behind her big issues, the problems that she really had, and that was Bernie Sanders. And then after she still triumphantly beat him, then Donald Trump had an angle. But Donald Trump didn't take that angle. He was saying the same thing the whole time when he beat all the 19 Republicans and then continued on into the normal party election. They felt she'd got damaged by someone who was smart enough to damage her, which they felt were with nefarious tactics. There were stabbing in the back, underhanded things to do to her. And then she was too damaged at that point to beat him.
Let's not undercount that, you know, this is nobody should wish death upon any lawmaker, especially an editor for Ms. Magazine. But in Katie's piece, she does say, you know, the problem is when an editor expresses joy at someone's eventual death and fantasizes about building a monument, not an homage, on top of the grave. Then this happens to be a sitting senator who ran across the country, campaigning harder for Hillary Clinton than any other single human being besides Bill Clinton, is irrelevant but poignant. Then she goes on to say, allow me to address the inevitable responses that my statements will provoke. And I think this is really relevant. People wish for Clinton's death all the time. Absolutely true. Yes, they do. They are randos on the internet and not editors of major publications.
Yes.
But rejoicing at Hillary's death would be misogynistic and representative of violence and a harassment that women face more than men and that Clinton faced more than Sanders, which is true. But with that being said, this is, in my opinion, and as a feminist, when I would counter my lovely friends who didn't speak to me for 2 years on the campaign trail, I'd say to them, when you accept Wall Street money, you are basically siding with the side that's fighting against equal pay. They're the ones who are literally building the tax code so that women of color across this country are hurt the most. They're the ones who are going against unions, who of course represent women and women of color the most. So don't tell me you're a feminist when it comes to just white feminism and not economics. The only person in that race who was fighting for those issues was Bernie Sanders. And so I countered her by saying economics is the unifier. And you are now continuing to separate communities, including the Bernie community, which is a little bit split here. And I think if you agree with us on this, you should have Katie Halper's back, because she's getting attacked on the internet right now like crazy because she defended Bernie Sanders from basically death threats.
Yes.
Why is that bad? This is crazy.
You know, on the one hand, I think there's something to mocking somebody like Carmen Rios for still being so fixated on the primary campaign last year. But on the other hand, the 2016 election overall represented such a profound reconfiguration of American politics and sort of shifted the terms of, you know, the intra-party divisions in both parties, that it's not surprising to me that people would still be pretty enmeshed in those debates even now, you know, 6+ months after the election. Because they sort of define how American politics is now ordered. So while, you know, this is what she said there is sort of petulant and idiotic, but at the same time, I think we should embrace the fact that our politics are in flux.
Right.
And that was catalyzed by the tumultuous election last year.
Can you imagine if Cenk had said that, or if Anna had said that, or Jake Tapper had said that? I think the question is, what is Ms. Magazine going to do? Are they at least going to issue a statement? Are they going to do anything about this? Because that tweet is still up there, and now Carmen Rios is complaining that she had to shut down her account because she was getting so many attacks. Well, guess what? You're an editor.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to a quick break.
You just tweeted out a death fantasy of a politician who's the most popular politician in the goddamn country, and you didn't realize that there would be ramifications of that, and somehow it's the people who are upset at your bullshit behavior. It's their fault you had to shut down your Twitter account. No, again, another Clintonite who can't take responsibility for their rock-bottom shit behavior.
I usually keep my death fantasies to myself.
I think we all should. All right, on that note, let's go to a quick break, because I'm going to be a responsible host today. We'll be back in a minute.
Oh,
America is falling apart as we know it. Religious liberty, not really a thing, because they're using religious liberty to strike out other liberties. Mm-hmm. Donald Trump, our president, it is now almost confirmed that they're going to be signing. He's going to be signing an executive order on religious liberty at the White House on Thursday tomorrow. Two senior administration officials have confirmed the plan, but not that it's happening tomorrow as an executive order, but pretty much it's been indicated that way. And of course, our vice president, this is something he's really passionate about. So he is said to be the designer of the executive order that would be on religious liberty. So what is this draft right now? What's in it? It's being kept very closed. Nobody really knows what's in it, but some sources say that the draft had also protected the tax-exempt status of any religious entity that believes, speaks, or acts, or declines to act in accordance with the belief that marriage is or should be recognized as the union of one man and one woman. Other problematic features were that entitles that believe that an individual's immutable biological sex as objectively determined by anatomy, and that human life begins at conception and merits protection at all stages of life, were covered under the religious freedom order. The executive order would also establish a new bureau to protect religious freedom within the Justice Department, Jeff Sessions' Justice Department. It's all coming together now.
Finally, someone is standing up for the Christians in this country, and it's about time someone to let people discriminate against other people based on their religion that is completely made up. And, you know, even though we're a secular society and we're supposed to have division of church and state, we don't really have that in America, and I think it's great. I think it's great.
The ACLU does not think it's great. They tweeted out that, and if President Trump signs an order that would allow religion to be used as an excuse to discriminate, we will sue. Hashtag see you in court again.
Yeah.
They're getting snarky there.
Yeah, you know, the precise wording of this order is going to be really important. And yeah, we don't have that yet, or we don't even know for sure if it's going to be coming out tomorrow. But it's really sort of, it's a complicated subject. You know, the ACLU, I think, in certain instances, has come down on the side of people who feel like the government is infringing on their ability to freely practice their religion, or that they're getting undue imposition from state authorities. And, you know, theoretically, something along these lines could reasonably address the concerns of people like that who do really believe that they're being encroached upon by the state. But at the same time, it seems that what is very likely to happen if, you know, in order with the wording that we currently have were to be issued, is that it would be used as a cover to basically discriminate against LGBT people, and it would be used to circumvent laws which actually protect LGBT people. So I think there's a way to address religious liberty concerns, which a lot of people do have for some legitimate reasons, without veering into the territory of, we need to just throw a bone to kind of Christian conservatives who feel like their views on sexuality issues and so forth should be enshrined in secular law, which is not.
What would be one of the legitimate reasons they would be a? You said that some of the legitimate reasons for the religious right to want to discriminate against LGBT people. What would be some of those?
Well, not that. I'm not saying. I'm saying religious liberty concerns overall. There are some legitimate concerns. It depends on specific examples. I don't think there's ever a legitimate reason to discriminate against LGBT people. But for example, you know, there was a suit that Catholic nuns had initiated against Obamacare because they didn't want to be required to provide contraception.
Right.
Now, I think it's just a muddled, it's sort of a hazy issue, and this wouldn't be the right approach to address it, that's for sure. But I try to warn progressives and leftists to not be overly dismissive of people who have sincerely held religious beliefs and feel like they're being encroached upon by the state. Don't just dismiss that out of hand. I think there's some way to forge a consensus on those issues that doesn't allow for discrimination, but also doesn't unduly burden people who just want to practice their beliefs in private.
What if it, I mean, I think the danger is it becomes a vehicle. So you go to the Catholic nun situation, you have these Catholic hospitals, and I'll use an example in Phoenix. Of all people to go up against this, Cindy McCain, Senator John McCain's wife, was against the Catholic Church's. They were not going to be conducting abortions, and she, even if it was in the case of rape, incest, or a woman who was, you know, had issues during her childbirth, they were like, nope, we're not going to do it. And so she went forward and said, you know, you can't do this. This is the only hospital in miles for many people because it was in West Phoenix. I mean, this is just one case and example. And they said, well, it's a religious issue because we are a Catholic hospital. It's like you're the only hospital within 15 miles. So what's the woman supposed to do, die? And Cindy McCain stepped up and she fought that and she won the situation. So I think, you know, it becomes a vehicle, a tool for a political agenda in a conservative, you know, in Arizona in particular, it's not necessarily a Catholic state, but it's a conservative state. And, you know, you it's a slippery slope.
It definitely can become a vehicle for that. But I'm just saying, in principle, there are ways to protect religious liberty that don't necessarily have to become a vehicle to enable discrimination. So I think it's just worth making a distinction there rather than just dismissing outright the notion that certain people believe their religious liberties are being infringed upon. Again, I don't think this order would be the correct way to address it by any stretch. But I'm just saying, in terms of the principle of the matter, there is something there that people on the left should have legitimate reason to be at least not dismissive of.
You know, I hear what you're saying, Michael, but as a nightclub comedian of 30 years, my stock in trade was mocking the religious. So just so you know.
Hey, I'm in favor of mocking the religious. I mocked Easter.
Oh, okay, good. Oh.
And I spent probably the full day taking just incredible condemnations.
I hate that bunny, too. I'm with you.
I call it Desert Resurrection Day.
Okay.
All right.
And you get hell for that, I bet.
Speaking of religious liberty, ISIS is coming after you. That's what a new candidate says for Virginia Lieutenant Governor. There is a guy named Bryce Reeves who's running for Lieutenant Governor of Virginia. Let's play his ad because it's a beauty.
This is the America Obama left behind. Terrorists living here, FBI investigating ISIS nationwide, frightening families. I'm Bryce Reeves. I helped pass anti-terrorism legislation here in Virginia. And as a former police officer, I'll support our cops and fight to defund sanctuary cities.
Look at that expensive house. Look at that expensive house.
My jaw is on the floor after seeing that. That was incredible.
I like that ISIS is wearing camo in the middle of a city. Because they put on camouflage, because it really really camouflages you against this backdrop of city houses.
It was a cul-de-sac. It was a suburb.
ISIS has been apparently burgling homes in the suburbs. Like, that's their main mission now, to wage jihad.
Why wouldn't they kill that lady and her kids? They would have just chop her head off with a knife and then jump in the car and get away. What are they wasting time for?
Because the cops are after them. Didn't you see
the
police officer in the cul-de-sac with the sirens blaring? I thought the suburbs were supposed to be safe. I know you got an opinion.
The one thing you notice, I look at small things in videos. They also jumped into a Ford van. At least they're buying American. There's so many economies.
Trump's America.
American.
Buy American. So you think he's going to win?
Oh, no doubt. Do you see how white he was?
Oh, his the best. We don't have a picture of this, but Google Bryce Reeves' family. Even his dog is white.
Nah.
Like, it's his big white dog. It's the whitest family ever.
I'm a former cop, but I'll back the police because that's what the cops need, more backing by the government. Cops never get supported. We just saw a guy get off yesterday. Oh, my God. When are the cops going to get a fair shake in the criminal justice system? When are politicians going to start getting behind our police? I'm certainly glad that Bryce guy is there to do that.
Thank God for Bryce. Literally, thank God.
Thank God.
Because in Pence's America, you got to thank God. That's the new rule.
That's the new rule.
In God we trust. You have to say it every morning when you wake up, every night before you go to bed. In God we trust. In Bryce Reeves we trust. All right, guys. Thank you for having us on the first hour. We have, who's on? Hassan, Brett, and Anna are the next hour. And then I'll be back tomorrow.
I'll be back tomorrow. I'll see you then. And I'll see you June 10th in Chicago.
See you June 10th in Chicago.
I'll be somewhere.
on the internet. Michael lives on the internet, right? You do. What? Start an internet fight right now, Twitter fight. Okay. That's where you'll be.
I'll give some thought to it.
But seriously. All right, thanks, guys. Next hour, go.